Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.
Pastor Munga, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you, my brother?
Very well, thank you. How are you, Pastor?
No, we are doing well. How are you over there, Brother Mamalote?
Well, we are doing well. Thank you so much for asking. It's been a good day. It's been a relaxed day. I must say that quite quiet, actually, because it's a holiday here in South Africa. How are things there in Zambia?
No, it's the same everywhere. I'm sure this holiday, the Labor Day, it's almost everywhere. We saw people marching.
Yeah, yeah.
People talking about, of course, the employees, the employers,
yeah,
and those wonderful discussions.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Now, let's get into our discussion. We are talking about our identity in Christ. And those who are joining us on the line, we are talking to Pastor Passmo Munga, who's been joining us since Monday, talking about this subject. And so if you want to be part of these discussions, please do make sure that you hit us up on +27 734 703520. That's our WhatsApp line. Drop us a text if you want to contribute or any question that you have. And you may know that since its inception in 1863, the Seventh-day Adventist Church has become a significant global body with congregations in more than 200 countries and a membership of more than 20 million. Now, Pastor, as a global movement comprising of several different cultures, ethnicities, and languages, how can such a diverse group of people make up one family?
It's not easy, Brother Lotte. I have seen the SDA Church in 9 countries that I have lived. And it's not easy. I have seen this SDA Church in Botswana, in Namibia, in German, in Malawi, in Zambia, Tanzania, Uganda, and Kenya. It's in the first place, we need to, what I have come to accept is that the church is, for us to understand the church, we need to get the words. I was just reading a book and where there's a quotation by Spurgeon there. Charles Spurgeon, one of those preachers. And he says, what we think we want from a church is almost never what we want, what we need.
Yeah.
The church is designed not to be a comfortable place. Your dream church, Brother Lotte, my dream church, did you know that it does not exist?
Yeah.
People who are good, people who hug you, you not quarrel, you not step on each other's toys. That church does not exist. I've been looking for it. It doesn't exist somehow.
Yeah.
But in our mind, we still feel that there is somewhere where you can find a comfortable church. People are converted and they have this, a beautiful culture. You find that actually even within South Africa, within your community, where you stay, you stay in Johannesburg or Cape Town?
We are in Johannesburg.
You find even in Johannesburg, you go to Johannesburg Central, you go to another, we just pick 5 churches. You find that each of those churches has got its own culture.
True, true.
And people who are there are comfortable with it. Now, what more when we talk about the global church? I'm told that in India, actually, they use drums in the church.
Okay.
Yeah, they use drums in the Seventh-day Adventist church. Now, I imagine whether, when if you are invited in India there to go and preach, and then before you preach, now they bring the drums and people start everything around. So it's not easy. But what is important is that a church is supposed to be composed of people who are focused on and held together by Jesus. They are focused on and held together by Jesus. Without that, the church falls apart.
Yeah, true. Very true. Sure. Now, is there one culture? I mean, I hear you saying you lived in at least 9 countries and you've seen, different cultures in these, the church living in different cultures across many countries. In your travels and in your observations, have you seen any one culture that is, holy, inverted comma, than the other, better than the other, perfect than the other?
In the first place, no. I have not seen a culture where you'd say, no, this culture, the African culture, the Zambian culture, the Kenyan culture. You find wherever you go, there are some aspects that you will learn, which you find. But this aspect here is better than it is in our place. When you go to another place again, you find that this aspect is better than here and there. For example, like when I was in Germany, when we went to Germany, one of the fears that we had as Africans, how are we going to be assimilated there?
Yeah.
How are the brothers going to receive us there? But up to now, I have not gone to a church or a place where I found the loving people than the people we found in the Federal Republic of Germany. I tell my wife and I tell all the congregations that I've never, in all the countries that I've gone, I've never seen where you see love with your eyes. You see love walking in shoes. Not just making people stand up. No, these are our visitors, this and that. No. We saw that the church is at another level.
Okay, all right. That's beautiful.
One of the examples that I can tell you that
Please.
We went to this church, we were 8 of us, and one lady, a doctor, invited us for lunch to her home, 8 of us, and we are talking about only men.
Wow.
Now, we are all Africans, and then we go to this church, say, no, please, we go. And as we were having a meal at this lady's place, she had invited another family, and this family says, next Sabbath, you must come to our church. And they provided transport for the 8 of us. We went there, we congregated. When we were living there, we were given packed lunch, each one of us. I've never gone to another church where I had that such reception.
Yeah, I must tell you, quite exciting to hear and very impressive as well. Now, Pastor, what would you say are the benefits of acknowledging our diversity and infusing that into our religious beliefs and practices, of course, provided it doesn't go against the Bible?
Thank you. In the first place, culture can never be separated from anything, whether it's education, whether it's development. Once you try to separate it, things fall apart. It doesn't just work out. Even when you look at the Bible was written in a context of culture.
Yeah, true.
The feeding of the 5,000. The Bible says Jesus fed the 5,000 men.
Including
children and women. That is culture. It's not spiritual, but that is culture.
Yeah.
That you only count men and the women and children, just like children. So whose child is this? Whose wife is this? They are counted as a property of this man. So the culture has always go together. But if we try to separate it, you find that even I was invited to a seminar where we are talking about evangelism. We said that if the whites who brought the gospel, the missionaries who brought the gospel in Africa, if they had studied our culture, preaching of the gospel could have been 10 times easier.
Yeah.
Because we look at our beliefs, every ceremony in Africa, almost every ceremony in Africa, in terms of where I've got, there is a sacrifice. There is blood that is shed. That is culture. That is what we find in the Bible. There is no remission of sins without a sacrifice. You find that element. So the culture, when it is blended well, it can enhance actual spirituality. So culture and what we believe in, you cannot separate it. You can't. What you eat, what you do, you cannot separate it. In Africa, in our context, if you are an adult, you call a child. When the child comes to you, what is the child supposed to do? To kneel down.
Yeah, and not look at you in the face.
Not look at you into the face. That is culture. But that, at the same time, that is respect. So you find what would be called respect in one culture, in the other culture it may not, but the principle is still the same. the preferences may change, may differ. That what you call modest here is defined like this. What you call modest in another place is like this. But otherwise, the culture and what we believe in under normal circumstances is not supposed to be at conflict. Jesus lived and was born in the context of a culture, the Jewish culture.
Yeah. And, you know, quite interesting what you're mentioning, because, you know, in an African culture, of course, when you call a child, they expect to be kneeling and, of course, not look at you in the face. But in other cultures, the minute they don't look at you in the face, it spells out mischief and whatever they've been doing. And so you can see there that quite a difference in cultures there. Now, are there dangers of infusing? And I do know that you spoke about advantages of infusing our culture into our religious beliefs and practices. Would you say are there dangers to that? On the flip side of the coin.
Yes, of course. When we bring in the culture at the expense of what we believe in, if the culture is to override what we believe in, you find there are certain times, again, when the culture has brought too much that it even washes away what you believe in. That may not be safe. Like in one of our cultures here, you find when they go there, the king, there's a ceremony. What do? They slaughter this animal, and then they get the blood of that animal in a bowl or in a cup. And the king is supposed to drink that blood when everyone is watching. In the presence of everyone, you get this cup and then you drink that blood. Now, if you have to do that in a church setup, that would be a serious conflict with what we believe in.
I'm saying it's an interesting example, because one can say, but you guys are drinking the blood of Christ, Moss.
You know, that kind of thing. You say, actually, like in the temple, the priest, the whole business was actually with blood.
Mm.
They get blood from one place, they take it to another place.
Mm.
Moses had to sprinkle the people with blood.
Mm.
So you find that when we go maybe again to the extremes, you find it is this same cultural norms or practices that may wash out whatever we believe in. So there should be a balance that my culture should not conflict what I believe in. For example, in our place, the southern part of Zambia, there is a place where people, they used to go to a shrine. I'm sure you must be conversant with a shrine.
Mm.
If there was a drought, if there was a disease, people would go there, they would clap, and then there would be a priest, someone who would go there, someone who is possessed. They talk, they do everything there, slaughter an animal, sprinkle the blood inside there, and they believed if there was a drought, then it would rain, or the outbreak of a disease would go.
Mm.
So when they did not know the truth, it was all right. But if I go there today, that we have got a drought, like what we experienced in Zambia, we have got a drought, let's go to the shrine. When you reach the shrine there, you remove your shoes, you sit, the one who is possessed goes into, because you find there's a shelter, then there's another small house inside, you slaughter a chicken or a cow, you get the blood, you sprinkle it, it will not work out, because all those things in the architecture were pointing to Christ.
Mm, mm,
but there's people who still want to uphold those things. That much as I am a Christian, but I still have to uphold this. The issues of, like, if we come closer home, the issues of cleansing. I don't know how it is in South Africa. When someone dies, if a married person dies, the man dies, the woman has to be cleansed. If they were if it is the wife who has died, the man has to be cleansed. So at times you find that even church members become victims, that they bend to the culture. So, okay, yes, we are Christians, but our culture, it demands this.
Yeah.
The person dies, you go to a sangoma. At times people are not going to a sangoma necessarily to go and find out who bewitched this,
mm-hmm.
but it is a culture that in some place, after a funeral, actually before people disperse, someone is dispatched to go and consult a sangoma, then you bring a report. Even when you have got the results of malaria or whatever disease, but you have to consult. So when we are Christians, that means those cultural practices that are in conflict with what we believe in are supposed to be set aside, so that the principles that we learn in the Bible are the one that we uphold. which is not an easy balance, I must mention.
It's not an easy balance indeed. Well, Pastor, Yes.
I must also mention why we are still there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When I was in Cayman one time, in one place at lunch, they brought this lunch, because there after lunch, you find the tall building. From the chapel, you go down in the restaurant. So when we are having our meal there, I requested for permission. I say I'm used to eating using my hands. I'm not used to eating using a fork and a knife.
Yeah.
Can you give me? Is someone going to be offended if I use my hands? They said, no. There's no problem. You can go ahead. So for sure, I went. I washed my hands as everyone was using their forks and whatever. I was using my hands to eat.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying may not be easy at times, but it is possible.
It is possible indeed. Well, Pastor Munga, I must thank you so much for your time joining us this afternoon. Thank you. And we are going to be connecting with you again tomorrow at the same time and same place.
It's a pleasure. God bless you and God bless our listeners.
Thank you.
Broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.